Welcome to this week's VFX show. I'm Mike Seymour, coming to you from London, actually, and joined by two, I think, Californians at the moment. Where are you, Mark?
Yes, in San Francisco, as always.
And KM, where are you?
I'm in Pacifica, California, just about 10 miles to the south of San Francisco.
And I'm referring to KM because when I say Christian Martin, I get it wrong in some form of my dialect that always upsets me tremendously. So I'm gonna can I do that? Will you forgive me?
It sounded like you got it right there.
I know, but I dare risk it ever again. I'm gonna nickname you KM, and that's what I'm gonna call you.
Okay, that's fine.
Hey, starting with you, what did you think of the movie? The Fifth Element, this week's topic. Chat. People know that because I've discovered, of course, that you download the podcast, you've seen the name at the top of the podcast, so it's less of a surprise when I announce it inside the show.
But yeah, just in case that you didn't look at the title, now you know. I liked it very much. It's been one of my favorites for quite a while. I love the production design and the score and the sound design. The costumes are wonderful. I like that there's a mix of campy comedy and science fiction and comic book art. I just think it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. In fact, I've been really looking forward to this discussion because it's a film that I really like a lot. What about you, Mark? How are you rating this film as a film overall?
I confess, as a film overall, I'm not terribly fond of this
what?
One.
It's you're kidding me.
Well, I confess, and this is almost un-American to say this, but I'm kind of a Francophile. Like, there's a lot of French things I like, but when the French get really silly and a little bit, well, a lot cynical, like in this film, I think this film just basically pokes fun at everybody in it in a kind of mean way. So
what?
I just got tired of that.
It pokes fun at opera singing aliens? No, surely not.
Actually, that's the one exception.
That operatic scene is spectacular. I love that. Well, let's start with the director.
And then it turns into French hip-hop.
And what is wrong with French hip-hop? There's nothing worse with French hip-hop than there is with any other type of hip-hop. Hey, so let's start with Luc Besson. I really like his work. I really like his eye, and I guess for me, this is a very stylized film. I particularly like the music of this because. Did you guys ever see the Big Blue?
Yeah,
yeah.
I think I saw the uncut version.
I haven't seen that yet.
Terrific film, and I believe it was scored by the same. Well, the music was done by the same person, which is Eric Sierra, and actually. I think I just have the soundtrack of that. I'm just like terrific stuff, and so I just the whole thing for me, did great things. I mean, Eric's done other stuff like Goldeneye and sort of more obvious things, but you know stuff like Nikita and stuff is all there. So that's on the audio side, and as a film in general, I liked it because I like things that aren't sort of too predictable and kind of left field. And quite frankly, I thought the visuals were spectacular, and it's the visuals that we're here to discuss, being the VFX show. So, Kay, I'm starting with you. Just focusing down on the visual effects, this film is a little old, but that's the whole point of doing one of our favorite retro shows. How do you rate the visual effects, and do you think... obviously now quite a few years on since it was released that it stands up well or not?
You know, I thought about that. It had been quite a while since I'd watched the film, and I was like, well, I wonder if this will hold up. And I think for the most part, the effects do hold up. And I like the contrast that where they have a lot of miniatures and then they have the CG elements too. So, you know, it was pretty groundbreaking for the time.
We're talking about 1997 and a lot of work by Digital Domain. What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I remember actually really anticipating this movie. If you remember way back 12 years ago and before, I mean, really the whole decade of the 90s, it seemed to me, and you may not agree with this, but what I remember thinking is that, you know, CG was this brand new toy in everybody's toolbox. And nobody was really daring to do a grand vision of the future. We'd had a few in the 80s, and then they kind of stopped right when, you know, the digital dinosaurs started kicking around. And so what I remember hearing about this film when it was in pre-production, which it had a long pre-production during which they had a bunch of designers just... Their brief, as far as I heard it, was to reimagine everything. Like, look at a bookcase and think how it could be completely different in 300 years.
And he had, he had two big name comic book artists that worked on the pre-production design. I mean, these were his heroes, Mezier and Mobius. So just the fact that, and they spent like a year setting all this stuff up. So pretty amazing.
I mean, I thought it was good. I mean, obviously we are, as you say, set into the future. What, about 250 years or something like that? It's thereabouts. I think that's right in saying that. But it's
2268 or 86, yeah, or something like that.
There's a couple of hundred visual effects shots in a time when a couple of hundred visual effects shots definitely earned you a seat at the table. And Mark Stetson was behind visual effects supervision on this film, and I think it's darn good. I think the matte painting in this film was just cracking.
And it's gorgeous. I guess
the iconic images for me, I mean, obviously the one of the most sort of spectacular is the sort of 2,000-foot pleasure cruiser, the operatic platform upon which we were referring to earlier. But there's these iconic images of that Chinese junk, you know, servicing Bruce Willis through the window, and the shot of the cars traveling, and of course the, you know, just sort of general hover car thing that is, I think, just those are really, really strong images, and they're strong today as they were then. And I maybe I don't know, Cam, do you think that is just a comic book kind of thing, that the graphic nature of those images came from that graphic comic kind of sensibility? Or
yeah, I absolutely think so, and I think also from Besson's imagination, you know, working in conjunction to complete the whole look, and all the things with the, like you said, with the flying cars, with the whatever it was, Chinese food, Thai food, junk that came to deliver the food to Bruce Willis. I mean, it's just amazing, the whole look.
Yeah, it really, really is. And it's hard for me, actually, when I think back to the film, to think of the film starting with 90210 stars running around in kind of pyramid period stuff. Because I always think of the film as starting in Bruce Willis's kind of times. Is that the same? Is that for you guys as well, or is that just me?
Yeah, it's kind of like when The Exorcist starts in the same part of the world. It's hard to remember that, but it actually gives it a little bit of weight.
Yeah, I mean, I particularly like that city stuff. And I guess for me, I don't even think of it as being pretty much a Bruce Willis vehicle. You know, like, I don't sort of, if you said to me, name Bruce Willis films, it would take me a while to get around to Fifth Element. So for me, that graphic design-ish sensibility that goes into the incredible production design and visual effects, that is, along, I guess, with Jean-Paul Gaultier's amazing costume design, what I think of as, you know, being essentially Fifth Element. Mark, did you fancy yourself in a Jean-Paul Gaultier sort of strappy number?
No, I mean, I think that hits right on where I really just can't get with this film completely. I mean, to me, it's like I looked in the dictionary and under self-indulgence, it actually currently references Chinese democracy, but the older edition actually referenced Fifth Element. And I think using Jean-Paul Gaultier as your costumer is a good example. I mean, I don't know. This is not some of the other films that it kind of heavily borrowed from. And I just, again, I think there was a palpable making fun of everybody with the way they were costumed. And it was just silly.
Really?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was really silly. And I mean, who besides Mila Jovovich is going to look... I mean, that dress didn't catch on, let's put it that way.
Well, true.
One thing I did like, there's a kind of funny connection between this film and Star Wars, because at one point you have this fat cop lady showing up in Princess Leia bun hair.
Oh, right.
You know, which is like poking fun. And then, but then it's like Star Wars got him back, right? By completely ripping off the whole flying cars in the city thing, taking it back. I don't know if they ripped it off. That's not fair, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't think that it was. Just talking about that sort of semi-seriously, I don't think that I would have described, the whole look of this as being derivative. I thought it was pretty, pretty fresh. I mean, sometimes obviously going to be a bit derivative.
There's one particular ship, and I don't know how to call it, but it was basically a Star Destroyer in a tube.
Right.
There's another one that looked like kind of like a turd as modeled by Philippe Starck. That first one that you see.
Okay.
Tell us how you really feel.
That's not totally bad. That was definitely original. Like,
oh,
that
yeah,
thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really, as I said, for me, the strongest thing's the matte painting. And one of my favorite matte painters, Wayne Haag, did a bunch of stuff on Fifth Element. And he did a ton of the stuff on Lord of the Rings, and I think his work is magnificent. The Jean-Paul Gaultier angle, I thought, gave it a kind of chic kind of coolness. It was less, big-breasted, chicks in the kind of tradition of the stupid sci-fi, and more quirky and interesting. The aliens were quirky and interesting. I liked a lot of the twists that happened in terms of just, how the design played out. Testing the weapons sequence, for example. I mean, that was just a really funny sequence for me.
It is funny. And I mean, Gary Oldman, when he shows up twitching his way through this film, really pulls a lot of energy in. And yeah, that gun is cool. I mean, if we're going to talk about that, the little transformation sequence, I think that still holds up really well. And it was a nice little bit of CG.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
That surprised me that held up that particular sequence with the gun.
It doesn't hold together. Then they use like four different versions of the gun and they don't match at all. But the first one, when it transforms, is like, oh, wow, that was cool. And it was the first time. I mean, we've certainly seen that a lot since. And yet I can't think of too many examples before that weren't, that didn't have to be done practically.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys to name your favorite sequences, whether it was, operatic chicks with very funky hair, or the rapping shootout from hell that followed it, or, in fact, any of the space sequences. I mean, just be really positive for a second. What did you think was, like, some of the best visual effects work in it? Because I said I love the matte paintings. I mean, quite frankly, I just think they're iconic and brilliant. What about you guys?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as you say, anytime there's a cityscape, it's just like, ooh, those are great. I think that, one thing about the era of the movie, it really went for it in terms of letting CG be CG. So there's the creation sequence of Mila. And, that could have been done more realistically with a mixture of, I mean, even at the time, they could have mixed practical and CG, but they just went for it. It was a very mid-90s SIGGRAPH kind of approach to doing a money shot. And I think it's pretty satisfying. I think you just accept it in the world of the film. It's kind of it's a futuristic device. Some things work better than others. The look of the skull when they're kind of scanning that thing in doesn't even look very dimensional. But overall, I mean, it just, you knew as you were watching that, like, wow, that is something. You had that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the time, I thought that reconstruction sequence was pretty cool, actually. I remember that whole idea of laying up the bones and the muscles and stuff. And I certainly liked the scene that followed, break through the wall and dive out the window. But I guess for me, there just is this whole kind of multipass quirkiness to it that I found it charming. And the junks were, in that same vein, and the whole kind of spirit of the shootout that I alluded to earlier, you know, which was obviously incredibly comical, but still quite engaging, that followed the opera sequence. I'm not faulting this film a lot. I liked it a lot. If I had one fault, I guess, I did think that it kind of lacked a mega undercurrent of sort of sustained plot. I mean, it kind of moved from place to place, and I enjoyed each place it went to, but I didn't feel completely compelled. I don't think this is sort of rate as, you know, in my sort of Dark Knight Godfather level of fave films. And certainly,
yeah, it's the plot line that Robert McKee most likes to make fun of, where you have the thing that will destroy the world if it falls into the wrong hands.
And at the end, that wasn't the you know, final four elementy things. I mean, I wasn't sort of on the edge of my seat wondering how that was going to come together. It wasn't as plot device bad as the last Indiana Jones film, but it certainly didn't, you know, leave me feeling particularly, I don't know, happy. I mean, you can fault the cruiser now with our kind of particularly developed sensibilities to CG, you know, but at the time, the CG that they did and the, you know, the work that did really stood up pretty well. And I guess that was more so evident in the car sequence than the ship for me, because the whole liner didn't, I guess, impress me the way that the texturing on the CG on the car stuff did. And maybe that just meant we got to car textures, you know, quicker in CG in 97. But I don't remember it as being such. I think Digital Domain actually developed quite a lot of car techniques from their ad work around that early time, and that was it. So let's change gear slightly and just discuss it in terms of the non sort of least effective things, because I've started alluding to it. KM, like, is there things in there that you just sort of looking at it now kind of make you cringe a bit?
Well, it's pretty much the same as the first time I saw it. I had Ruby Rod. The character is like, oh, it's like completely over the top, and it's like, it was okay for like 30 seconds, and then after that I was just like, please make that stop. But
the flying on the Mile High Club kind of stuff didn't
No, I just meant his character altogether. I mean, some of that stuff that was really campy on the cruiser or whatever, that was, you know, that I thought was funny. But him in general, and the fact that it was just, it lasted as long as it did, it was such a, had a major role in the film, was annoying.
Okay, and from a visual effects point of view, was there anything that you didn't think stacked up?
There's a few things that I guess just, you know, given hindsight, you know, having that we've sort of been spoiled at this point to, you know, expect a certain level. But, you know, I can't really think of anything that's like, oh, it just ruins it for me.
And Mark, were there any huge fireballs threatening Earth that you didn't like, or was it...
Thanks for the prod, Mike. Actually, I'm going to go back a little bit. The thing with the cars that we didn't mention is the animation of them is solid enough that we didn't mention it. It's actually, you know, I mean, I look at this, you know, the technology of the time and what it could do, and then what people were actually doing. It seems to me what you're saying about the comps, I mean, certainly you weren't limited by the technology of the time to get a little bit more you know, light matching and interacting into some of these. Not that you would do it at the level you would now or with as much ease, but you could have done it. I mean, if you or I were teleported back in time to comp those shots, I think we'd have an idea what other things we might want to do with them, given that they were not optical comps.
Well, but Digital Domain around this time was a big flame house. I mean, they had, or rather, I think it was Infernos. They just had a stack of Onyxes downstairs at DD. I think it was like 13 of them. It was the golden age of was Flames doing film comps with DD around this time.
Yeah, and I mean, I just think that we have all learned to look at some of these types of shots, you know, with different eyes over time. And, you know, also the techniques themselves have become more common and refined. So, you know, that would be my comment about that. I I have to say, this film is let down a lot by its choice of color look, and which ties it more to, I don't know, Total Recall. You know, these kind of dystopian yet brightly lit and colorful kind of Star Trek-y future movies.
Yeah, it is definitely perky, isn't it, at points? Even when it's trying to
be
grungy.
And I mean, so unfortunately that actually kind of dates it in a way that, you know, Blade Runner has got that going for it. And it, in a way, Blade Runner is more a world you would actually want to be in just because it feels more tactily real and in some cases inviting. I mean, the linking element between the two films is Brian James, I guess, and I don't know if I'd exactly want to be him in either one. Certainly not in well, I anyway.
But I mean, okay, what stacks up to Blade Runner? I mean, let's discuss that, right? Because I mean, Blade Runner's gritty, rainy, you know, Terrell Corporation-y kind of existence was pretty bleak. And you're right, this film was much more the everything shot at golden hour, kind of perky, sunsetty colors that kind of that saturated up the reds and stuff.
Well, right, and unfortunately, that for me ties it more to like Idiocracy or films that kind of actually in our current era would make fun of the future or that view of the future.
Right, because it was so sort of glowingly, yeah. I mean, the parts that weren't, but yes, it was terribly kind of shiny and new and blue and wonderful. And even when they went for the grunge, it wasn't like sticky, dirty, get under your nail grunge. It was more like scuff marks on things. I think it's easier though to sell that whole grunge thing. Like, it's harder to do kind of futuristic and make it look real if you mm-hmm. leave the grunge out of it. Because, I mean, quite frankly, you know, sometimes you see, like, there was an airport terminal in France, the most extraordinary ceiling, the most unbelievably cool architecture. And I stood in the darn thing thinking it didn't look real. Do you know what I mean? I was actually there. whereas when you start doing the super grungy, rainy, dirty, Blade Runner-y thing, I think it just generally is easier to sell. It's harder to have the kind of cleaner, and this wanted to be cleaner because you're not going to have a grungy, you know, cruise liner and maybe.
Well, this had a bit of the used future in it, but it after a while I was so hungering for something that felt a little bit more real that like when they get off or they got on the pleasure cruiser and they're greeted with Lay's and it looks kind of familiar like they're going to Hawaii. I actually like suddenly I was like, oh, okay, I can actually accept it a little more. And, you know, it's easy to lens these movies through the eye of, you know, every film now going through a DI and getting a much stronger color look. But even so, you know, sci-fi movies, I use Blade Runner not so much as an example of the used future, which this had a bit of, but for the color palette of it, which this one, I think, went more in the kind of candy store direction. And I just think that undermines the visual effort in some cases. And so for that reason, some of the things they did in a way went right through that and almost kind of come out the other side and work like the, I mean, I guess there are these crazy particle effects at the end that I think were done in prisms or
I think.
And you know, they look really dated, but they're actually kind of cool. And again, the animation of the effect is pretty good.
I mean, I think it was extraordinarily good for, you know, 97. I mean, you know, it's over 10 years old. And
you alluded to the fireball. Is that a kind of...
Well, it's just, you know, the... Yeah, I mean, what did you think of the sort of... I just didn't really... The council kind of discussion-y stuff around that time, and it all just didn't feel as well thought through and developed as some of the other stuff. And I'm just over fireballs in space. I'm over, you know, alien-y kind of... I don't know. It's hard to make that stuff do anything for me.
Yeah, even at the time, it was already getting a good workout.
Yeah, Yeah, it's like when you do your showreel, right? You know, it's just incredibly important not to put spaceships up front because everybody tunes out.
On the other hand, I mean, what's your opinion of the final...
The dark sort of... Sorry, go on.
Well, we had the final explosion that's, you know, key to the whole story, the ship explosion.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was done more practically, and I thought it looked pretty good.
Cam, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Mark on that one, that the last explosion was more convincing. I thought most of the things with the giant fireball and the president or whatever that was, the world leader, I mean, even the design, the production design in those scenes didn't seem as well.
It sort of felt
through.
Like they'd run out of money there, didn't it?
It was like, okay, no more money left for costumes.
We need
or
a really big star chain, but well, we just don't have anything. Well, I just do a whole matte painting. Well, we haven't got any matte painters free. All right, we'll just have about six guys in a room then. Call it quits. No one will ever question it. Yeah. Okay, well, I think we're in agreement that Mark doesn't know what he's talking about when he says he doesn't like this film, because I think it's a good film. I think you should rent it out. If you're keeping score at home, and I know many of you are because you've sent us emails and stuff to do it. Actually, this was featured in Cinefex number 70. I could talk more about this film at great length. Unfortunately, I am comatose from lack of sleep, having got up at 3 a.m. and been on set all day. So I'm going to throw it to you guys to if there's any other major points we haven't touched on. We've moved kind of quickly, but...
Yeah, one thing that we didn't touch on is the creature effects. I really like those. I like the Mondo Shawans at the beginning. I just thought that was so imaginative, how they were kind of lumbering along, and like you said, that beginning scene, that might not stick in your mind as the best one, but it's pretty amazing, and I like the Mangalores. I just thought it was very imaginative how they wove those into the story.
What about you, Mark?
Well, I mean, I do think a lot of that stuff works. I mean, I think now the general public has a sophisticated enough eye that anybody could tell you what was animatronic and what was CG and what was a rubber mask. But they were all well done animatronics, and, you know, where they used it, CG and rubber masks. So, and, you know, I mean, there's tons of bold art direction, some of which still really stands out as being original. And some of it, you know, some of it seems more derivative now, but I can see at the time, as I said, they really were rushing in where nobody was daring to go by just, you know, deciding to imagine a whole world. And I think this kicked off, you know, it made a lot of others bolder about doing that.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, you know, look, I could be proven wrong, but I definitely... I can't be proven wrong, actually, because it's, you know, retrospectively, it's out there, it's what it is, and it found an audience at the time. I think it's still worth it if you haven't seen it in a while to go check it out. There is some fun stuff in there. There is some good design, and I've yet to be talked out of this position by Mark, so I'm going to stick with it.
Good for you.
But I also wanted to catch you guys because as this show goes out on Friday, we're right before Oscars, and obviously last week we had our big Oscar wrap-up, but any predictions for you guys going into the weekend? Presumably you heard last week's show.
Since I haven't seen a lot of the films that are up for an award, I'm not going to even try to make a prediction.
I'm not sure that'll stop about half the voters, Kristen.
Kristen, I think you're absolutely being a coward. They're not picking that because I did it last week. Anyway, that's all happening this weekend. So if you're hearing this on Friday or Saturday, enjoy Oscar night if you can. Where can everyone find you guys? Cam?
Let's see. I am at Kristen at VFXshow.com if you'd like to make suggestions for the show or contact me. That would be the best way. I'm also on Twitter, Kristen C. Martin.
And we have our own Twitter feed. We have our own VFX show Twitter feed, don't we?
That's right. We also have our own VFX show Twitter feed, and it's just VFX show.
And what about you, Mark?
Yeah, my most interactive point is Twitter, and I'm Flow Seeker there. I am resuscitating a blog, but I really actually have some work to do on that by the same name. And yeah, I have some other things going on that maybe we'll touch on in a future show, but doing a little rebranding and getting involved with a couple projects here that are kind of cool.
Oh, cool. Well, you can find me over at fxguide.com when I'm awake, which I'm not currently. As I said, I'm just exhausted from shooting on. So you know what it's like, guys, when you're out on set, it's just absolutely draining. And yeah. And having said that,
respect to Mike. This is, yeah, man, that's amazing that you can, it's commitment.
Because I'm in London and I'm jet lagged. I literally woke up at 3 a.m., tried to get back to sleep, couldn't. Got up, did a several hours work. Got on set at 7, and we just came off set, and I was slightly late getting to this recording. So after a heads of department meeting, so I'm going to beg off and be full of energy next time we talk. I promise. Also, wanted to thank Laurie for doing our research as again, a terrific job in putting together our dossier stuff. We really do appreciate the guys that work behind the scenes. Yeah, it's great. This is obviously a co-production between Pixelcore and FX Guide. I'm Mike Seymour. Until next time when we talk, thanks so much, guys. And I'm certainly going to crash out and try and recover some semblance of normality. Until next time, guys, thanks so much for listening. See you.